And global warming, we're looking at the overall warming of the planet. 80% of that heat is going into the oceans. And what I'm talking about here, warming, additional warming from human-made greenhouse gases, mostly from carbon, from fossil fuels. And so we're seeing the major changes right now, some of the most major visible changes in the Arctic. Since the ocean is warming, the ice is melting. And that's then affecting the culture. The people that live, the Eskimo people, the Inuit people that live close to the land that depend on the ice to survive, their culture is being affected by this. It's affecting the wildlife. A lot of competition now with the bear. The bear used to be the top of the pyramid, but now with less ice and inability in some areas to hunt, the bear, you know, bear is not threatened yet, but the bear is, if the summer sea ice leaves, the bear is also going to disappear on us. And if we look at the Arctic on a planetary change, the heat balance of the Earth is changing because the summer sea ice used to reflect energy back into outer space, but now with that starting to melt, it's absorbing into the water and into the darker surfaces.
I guess my question is like you mentioned, there was a sea cap that was there and it had been there for 25,000 years as part of the last ice age. Well, there had to be a kind of global warming in order for that ice age to kind of diminish. How much of this is actually just something that's repetitive? Maybe it'll cool down again. And how much of it is us impacting?
That's a good question. Climate has natural variations. If we were to cool the Earth down 3 or 4 degrees centigrade, right here in Indianapolis, we probably have about a mile of ice over us. So, and then now you warm it, you know, 4 to 6 degrees, we have pretty mild temperatures. So there's a natural variation over time, up and down. But because of so much carbon dioxide being added to the atmosphere, carbon dioxide is like putting sweaters on yourself. It keeps the heat of the Earth in. And we are now off the natural variability. I mean, we're in a place in carbon dioxide where we're not sure what kind of climate is going to be produced from this. But we're at a level where we're looking down actually at the peaks of the warmer eras of the ice ages. So we're off the off the level of natural variation. I mean, climate has always changed back and forth. We always had strange weather. But now we're going to see more erratic, you know, changes. But you can't look at one hurricane, one rainstorm as being global warming. But if you add all this information together, which scientists are doing now, there is definitely a trend, a warming trend. And you're seeing that, especially in the Arctic.
So basically, I hear you saying that, you know, it takes just a couple of degrees of difference in order to really drastically affect an area. And then your stance is that there is enough human impact to essentially mess with that few degrees?
Yes, for sure. We've already risen maybe about a degree or so, which doesn't seem like much, but we're looking at adding 4 degrees as being a major change, maybe melting all the ice eventually in the world. So we're on this upward trend of rising carbon dioxide, rising temperatures, and there will be some natural variation, but that rise will continue. I mean, it's going so high and so fast with all the carbon that we're putting into the atmosphere right now. That's why we need to take seriously the solutions, things like ethanol, for example, and other biofuels. We're in an energy crisis. I mean, we could debate back and forth in global warming, but everybody understands energy. We know that gas prices are high. We know also that we're almost at peak oil. I mean, the maximum amount of oil that can be produced is pretty close to right now. So the supply is not going to be getting any greater. So we're going to see more expensive fossil fuels, which is going to start affecting our economy. And we're reliant on very questionable governments, actually, for our own fuel. So as a means of local economy in the United States, security, this is a major issue. I mean, we can forget about the environment if we want to, but my biggest concern would be for the economy. My question would be, the children of the day and their children, are they going to have the same standards of living that we're experiencing right now? I'm not sure if they're going to have that.
And with that in mind, you focusing on the economy and everything, what about, is ethanol just a step? Do you think we could ultimately move away from gasoline fuel as we know it?
I think we're going to be, in another decade or two, I think we're going to be moving away from fossil fuels. Price of fossil fuels are going to go way up. That's what's going to push it. And that's a great thing about ethanol. It's market driven. It's competitive. So if fossil fuel goes up, we can compete against that fossil fuel prices, and more people will buy ethanol. Now, if we get into the organic-based ethanol, that is, you know, reduces the carbon dioxide from 80% of what we're having, then we're going to start sidestepping. If you want to be futuristic, you can take a look at fuel cells. Down the line, a lot of our power could come from fuel cells. This is a long ways down the line. But fuel cells still need a carbon base for their heat and electricity. And if that carbon base is organic plants, then we've totally sidestepped the fossil fuel. So it's possible down the line. We're going to have to, 50, 60 years from now anyway.
Okay. I think that's all the questions I have for you. Anything you want to add that I didn't get to?
No, I think the United States is going to take the leadership in technology and in biofuels. I think especially in biofuels. I think we'll be selling our technologies to China and India. Everybody's very concerned. I'm concerned, too, about the rapid growth of power plants and transportation and so forth in India and China. But I see America as developing and then selling that technology for the solutions. I really have high hopes for America. I mean, I was around 1970s, 60s and 70s when we put a person to the moon. This project is a lot easier because it's market-driven, and I think we need to wake up the American spirit. I think it's being waken up. I think the Americans are also, my sense is that people are really tired of being divided, the political divide, and we need an issue like global warming and something positive like biofuels to bring the country together. We're seeing that in the rural areas. I mean, it's so great going into rural areas, speaking to the farmers, seeing the great economy that's going. Everybody's happy, and there's a great future there. That's the American dream, and I find people catch on just economically. If we keep the massive amount of trillions of dollars that we're giving to other, we're buying fuel from other governments. If we can keep that dollar in the economy, we're going to have we will have that lifestyle that we want our children to have 100 years from now.
Okay, finally, one more question. How do you think this race is going to affect the awareness of ethanol and its value?
Well, I think the Indy 500 is very good to show the performance that ethanol, alcohol-based fuels perform excellently. In fact, they can outperform gasoline. And I think the American public is maybe, it's a new fuel, something new. They have questions about it. The first question is it good for my car, or will I get better mileage on it? And I think the Indy 500 proves that and will prove it. We're seeing, for one, I think the real great thing of the Indy 500 is they're starting to develop engines specifically for ethanol, alcohol-based. And I think in our average civilian-type car, I think down the line, developing that type of engine for ethanol, rather than renovating a gasoline engine, starting from scratch with an alcohol-based engine, which we're now seeing in the technologies here. I think that's where the future is going to go. With that type of engine, we'll get great mileage and more efficiency and less carbon dioxide.
And you mentioned the big political divide, and it seems like sports is the one common ground. So,
Sports really pulls everybody together. That's a great thing. And the Indy 500 is pretty much, I think, politically neutral. Everybody's here on Memorial Day celebrating that great holiday. And, it's a great American event here. I'm really proud to be part of it.